another episode of Gold Terpers with Travis Garrison on the Field of 68 Networks. Got a special guest with me today, Mr. Chris Naki. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
Basketball analyst.
You know what? For Travis Garrison, I get to the gym early and I stay late.
Yeah, I appreciate that, sir. I appreciate that, man. How's everything going? It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. You and I usually cross paths a couple times a year. And, you know, gosh, it's been such a wild couple of years, Travis, with COVID. And, you know, last year there were no fans in arenas and stuff. It was just crazy. So hopefully we get a chance to visit sometime soon, aside from the podcast world, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely plan on attending the game soon. Definitely want to be more around the university more and be more involved with the basketball team, and especially. So definitely going to see you soon, sir.
Good.
In person.
Ah, look forward to that.
So now, before we get started about the Merlin basketball team, I'm not going to lie. I got to be honest. I didn't know this at first, but somebody told me that you was one heck of a basketball player. He's one heck of a basketball player, and you played at American University. And I'm like, I did not know. After all these years we've known each other, I forget who told me. And we had a good conversation about it. They said, oh yeah, he was really good. I'm like, are you really? I'm not saying like I didn't think you had any game. I'm not saying like that, but that's just something. I did not know, because coming up, when I was coming up, I didn't pay attention to college basketball at all until I got to DeMatt. Uh-huh. So that's when I got my history lesson on college basketball.
Yeah. Well, we're from a little different generation, you know, and and actually, you know, it's funny because I think that we all have, when we're growing up and you play and you aspire to be good. And one of the first times I remember thinking I could be really good at this and I can play in college was after a game against DeMatha, strangely enough, you know. And wow. So I was playing high school basketball in Northern Virginia. At W.T. Woodson. And DeMatha was great. They had terrific teams. You know, Pete, as a matter of fact, Pete Strickland, who's now the coach at DeMatha, was on one of those teams that I played against. But I used to play against this guy who used to kick my ass all over the place. It was Hawkeye Whitney, who's one of the great players in DeMatha history. And we played a game at Woodson, and I think I held him to 34 or something like that. But I had 28 on him. And wow. So, and he was, you know, he was bigger, stronger, better, faster, all the above. Mm. But it occurred to me at that point in time, you know, I think all of us need that sort of affirmation. You know, I mean, it's one thing to play well in your bubble, but then when you get outside it. So I actually started at the University of Colorado. That's where I started to play. And then I transferred back and played. I was the first recruit for a young Gary Williams at AU.
Wow.
He had just gotten the job. And I was playing in a pickup game out of George Mason. He had the job 2 days. He was looking for some guys who could kind of, you know, he wanted to change it over so it was his guys on the roster, right?
Right.
And I had stopped playing at Colorado. I played as a freshman, didn't play as a sophomore. So it was in between my sophomore and junior year. And Gary walked in. I mean, he didn't look much older than any of the other guys who were playing in the game and the pickup.
Right.
So Red Jenkins, who was my high school coach, introduced me to Gary afterwards. And Gary said, why don't you come over to campus in the next day or two? I'd like to talk to you. So that's how all that started. I was never a great player. I was good enough, you know, but I love the game. I've been around it now. Travis, God, I do the math sometimes and it scares me. I went to college as a freshman in 1976, 77. So basically I've been around the game now 46 years continually.
Wow.
Player, wow. Coach, commentator, you know, all the above. And, you know, I've been really, really lucky with the places it's taken me and the people I've been able to meet. And, I wouldn't travel in your circles if I weren't, you know, if it weren't for college basketball and what it's done for me.
That's awesome. And playing for a young Coach Williams, how was that? What was that experience? Was he the Coach Williams at Maryland, or was he you know, or how was
he was times 10, dude. I got the unfettered Gary Williams. He'd softened up by the time he got to you. So my high school coach, I referenced him already, Red Jenkins, was very paternalistic, grandfatherly type, you know, never, I think I heard him curse less than five times. You know, he was just a very guiding sort of a hand, you know, and that's, there are a bunch of different ways to get it done. That was just his way. Gary was more of a fire breathing dragon. And the reason why it was such a surprise was that, as you know, Travis, if the first time you meet him and it's off the court, he's quiet, he's low key, he's, you know, he's funny. He's, you know, he's all, you check all those boxes and then you tee it up, you know, you walk out there and you know, he's got the whistle around his neck and the practice, crumpled practice hand, practice plan in his left hand.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, you're like, holy cow, where'd this guy come from? But I could tell in the first like half dozen practices I was ever in, it was like, this guy is legit. I mean, he is so good at what he does. And, you know, like any other coach, you know, I think sometimes you have to weed out, and I coach forever too. So, I mean, but I think sometimes you have to weed out to get the most important and salient messages, you know. Absolutely. Coaches are going to harangue you and harass you, you know, that's just what they do. They're trying to prod you. But he was, I mean, I could tell early on that this guy's not going to be at AU very long.
Wow. That's awesome. And you end up going back and was an assistant coach under him as well, correct?
Well, I was going to be an assistant coach. I was going to be his grad assistant. And then he left to go to BC. They hired Eddie Tapscott, who was his top assistant. Mm-hmm. Tap was looking to fill out his staff. And I, you know, Tap knew I was looking to be a grad assistant. And I was very fortunate. Tap hired me as a full-time assistant at age 23, right out of college.
Wow.
And, that's because I was the only guy he could pay. So, you know, the only guy who could take that pay date. But it's funny, Travis, I always bust this guy a little bit, but it came down to me and John Calipari for the job. And Cal had some other things going on, too. I'm not sure how bad Cal wanted the job.
Right.
But Tap, I was very fortunate because Tap remains to this day one of my best friends in the world. He's now with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but I got really lucky. You know, a lot of life is being in the right place at the right time, and you know, and Gary and Tap were a big part of that for me.
Absolutely. Now you're absolutely right about being in the place at the right time, and you know, obviously, you know, being a good person and knowing the right people, you know, that definitely helps. I've seen a lot of that, just in basketball, period, you know, through my journey on and off the court, just the people you meet, whether it's here or overseas, I mean, all type of opportunities that come about it, you know, if you try to be a good person, a good character, you know, that's one thing, you know, Coach Wooden always was big on was character. I was just telling somebody that yesterday.
You know, and I it's funny, I always tell people that one of the lessons I've learned and almost 50 years now is that basketball karma is real. And if you are a negative and you are, you're a naysayer and you're a bad guy, you know, if it comes back to haunt you, it comes back to bite you at some point in time. And it might not be this month, might not even be this year, but ultimately you get what you deserve and you get what you earn out of it. And that's why I think that's another reason why I love the game the way I do. And that's why I like, you know, I think sports work that way to a large degree.
Absolutely. And it's funny. I was literally just listening to something yesterday, a message, and they talked about you reap what you sow in a sense.
Right.
And like you said, that goes towards basketball too. You know, you basically get out what you put in, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I try to tell, you know, I do a lot of stuff with kids now, and it's like the life skills portion is I'm telling, like, you know, you gotta, if you work hard or something, you really want to be something, you know, you have to work at it. It's not handed to you.
Do they understand that?
The way you break it down to them. So for me, I try to meet them where they at. For example, yeah. I use basketball analytics, and I learned a lot of life skills from basketball. You know, I've been on good teams. I've been on bad teams. I've been involved with good coaches. I've been involved with bad coaches. And I've seen the outcome of the reaction to the players are depending on how, if the coach is a negative person and is always negative, negative, negative. I mean, you're going, the outcome is not that great with the players. But if you, you know, even with teammates, you know, they've been positive and they make bad play, or next play. Everything's going to be good. It psychologically does something to you. So that's why I teach kids now in regards to being a good person, being a good teammate. It goes hand in hand. You know, if you work hard, if you really want to do something in life, or if you really want to achieve something, you have to put the work in, not just one time, but it's like, it becomes routine. So it's literally basketball hand in hand. That's literally a parallel line.
That's very cool. Very cool. Doing God's work. I love it.
Yeah, I'm trying my best to use my experience. I'm trying my best. Yeah, so now you did the assistant coach. You was a head coach for a while. What brought you to, how did you get to being an analyst for Maryland basketball? How did that come about?
So I had been, you know, when I was a head coach at American, you know, I had some guys largely in the TV world who told me that if I ever got out of coaching to give them a call and that they'd like to try me, you know, doing some games. And so I did that, you know, when I did get out of coaching, I did reach out to them and, you know, had a lot of really great opportunities early on. And I think I'd been out of coaching for a year and a half or 2 years when I was traveling all over the place. You know, that's one of the parts about it that you, first of all, on the level I was doing it, it was an avocation. It wasn't a vocation. I wasn't making enough just to do that, you know, just to do games, unfortunately. But I had a chance to travel and do a bunch of great games. And then about a year and a half into that, maybe 2 years into it, Gary Williams called me and he came back into my life again. And he said, the radio analyst for Maryland games had left. That was leaving to go to Atlanta for a new job. They were looking to fill the position and would I be interested in doing it? So he said, you're going to have to come over here and talk to the athletic director. It's not my decision, but I've, you know, encouraged them to talk to you. So, so I went over there and, you know, I had an old friend of mine who does a lot of radio and TV in the area, Doc Walker, who told me one time, you know, and he's not really in the business of giving advice, but one of the things he told me early on when I started doing games was, you know, the best possible situation you can be in is when you find yourself doing games for one team and you have guys that you get to know, you have guys that you get to root for. And he said, you know, that really is sort of the ultimate gig. And the other thing was Maryland offered that opportunity to me, but it also offered me a chance to stay much closer to home. My kids were young. You know, it wasn't fair to them, all the travel I was doing during the winter. I was traveling, ironically, Travis, I was doing a lot of Big Ten games. I was doing the Big Ten game of the week. Now I find myself in the Big Ten all the time. And you know, you travel to the upper Midwest in the winter, a lot of times you're not getting out of there, you know? So it worked out to do the Maryland games. That was this is how long ago it was. It was Steve Blake's freshman year.
Wow.
It was my first year. So that's 23, 24 years now. And so it all worked out, you know, it was kind of worked out perfectly. And here we are, man, you know, crossed a lot of bridges and it's been a phenomenal run. And one of the reasons why this year is so hard to take, you know, and hard to, I mean, you know, it's, I mentioned this to a few people, you get used to winning, man. You know, you get used to winning close games. You know, it's almost like you feel it's all a birthright. And fact of the matter is, it's not. And so it's a bitter pill to swallow when you start to endure it again.
Absolutely. And so you basically, I was recently talking to Ryan Randall. And I had him on the show. I was talking to Coach Dave Dickerson, and I just recently had him on as well. But I was talking about the process, and you came in right in time in the sense of you saw the young Steve Blake, and then you saw him go through that transition. You know, you saw the Juan Dixon as well. So, What was that like to watch? Like, what was that experience like? And then you got to do it in Cole Fieldhouse. I only played high school ball in Cole Fieldhouse. But I didn't get that. It's not the same as going to the Maryland Dukes and the North Carolina games inside that hot, steamy place.
Sweating your ass off. Yeah.
So what was that like to see, I guess, like when Steve first got there? I'm trying to think, when Steve Blake was the freshman, I know, was he there with LaRon Prophet? Was he?
LaRon had left. So let me sort of paint this. So this is really interesting, the timing of this. The year before Blake got there was the Stevie franchise year. Steve Francis was there. And so he was this enormous personality and talent. And, you know, I mean, hell, he was the second pick of the draft, right? I mean, it kind of speaks for itself. And so Maryland loses him after that 1 year. And it was sort of a, you know, how do you fill that role? Not one guy. One guy's not going to do that, right?
Right.
And so I think what happened that year was that Juan had sat out half the year and was available the second half of the year. He'd played well, sparingly, but he played well. Nobody could possibly foresee what happened the next year, you know, with Juan as a sophomore. He came miles. And but it was just kind of a collective. Everybody raised their game. And, you know, there were some great, great moments that first year. And I think one of the most important parts of the year, you know, as they say, failure can be fertilizer, right? And if you take it the right way, it was a great year, magical in a lot of ways. And then Travis, we got to Minnesota and we played UCLA. I think that might've been the Sweet 16. We were playing in the Sweet 16 against Minnesota, playing UCLA in Minnesota. And they could not do anything wrong, UCLA. They were like a well-oiled machine. Everything they did was right. Everything we did was wrong, and it was a pasting. You know, I mean, it was over early, and as awful as that was, I thought it was really great springboard to the next year. You know, when these guys had that taste in their mouths, you know, of how bitter that season ended, and that ends up being a Final Four year. Now there were a couple of trip ups along the way. Right. But it ended up being just a phenomenal year the next year. And I think the seeds of all that were sown in the year before, you know, Blake's freshman year, particularly with that loss at the end of the season.
Right. So, and I can just only imagine, like, just sitting there, because you get got the best seats in the house.
Yeah.
And you get to see the whole experience and feel that energy. Like, can you take me through just, what was it like just seeing the progression of it? Like, were you able to like see it like, oh, this team is going to be special? Like, you can see it like within, like, cause you send every game, you send the whole process, you send courts, you can hear everything that's happening. Did you know that it was leading up to that, or was like, maybe?
So I remember being at a practice early in the season and early in that first Final Four season, and getting a look at Chris Wilcox. That was my first, like, geez, you know, guys like that don't come along very often, right?
Right.
And he was so unpolished, but so intriguing for anybody who's coached. You're like, I can do something with that, you know? Right. So right. It's a team of guys that really came together. You know, it's funny. I always mention Blake as sort of my frame of reference. And I know Steve wouldn't remember this, but first time I ever met him. Now, keep in mind, I've been out of college basketball for a couple of years. All I was ever doing was, you know, radio and TV. So I hadn't been reading scouting reports or recruiting services or anything like that.
Right. So
I walked in, this was in summer, you know, about the start of school. And so all the players were on campus. Right. And so I walked into Jimmy Patsos' office because, you know what, I want to be entertained, right? So what else do you do?
All right.
Jimmy's office. And so sitting there is Steve Blake. Now, Blake is a scrawny, you know, pale, 6 foot. It seemed like he was 6'1", maybe at the time. Right. Or something like that. And And Jimmy introduced me to him, and I didn't even catch his name, but he introduced me to him, and I turned around and I said, "Hey, how you doing, man?" I shook his hand. I said, "Are you a manager or are you?" So Jimmy jumped all over. Jimmy's like, "Yeah, you never heard of Steve Blake, you know?" And I said, "Now you give me his name, he pronounces it. Now I got it. So, but you could see all those pieces coming together, you know, Blake being a pass first guy, which is perfectly ideal for what you have around him. You know, the evolution of Juan as your sniper, you know, Lonnie Baxter was an absolute load, and all those guys just coming together and heading towards the same peak at the right time. I mean, you don't see that happen anymore. Guys don't stick around anymore, but you don't see it happen. You never saw it happen a whole bunch.
Well, with Juan, I mean, like I said, through high school, I mean, everybody know the story, and just like you said, you see his progression. Did you think that he would become that Juan, one of the best players to come out of Maryland, to lead the team to a national, to help lead the team to a national championship? Could you see, obviously not as freshman year, you sent out, but like as time was going on, could you see that being a possibility?
Well, I mean, he was just so fearless, and it's amazing. You know, you've been around him, Travis. I mean, he's not that big, you know. He was in the middle of every play, and there were a lot of times I'm thinking, how does this guy play every minute of every game? He doesn't get hurt, doesn't ever get winded. I mean, he was in crazy shape. And so, and the fact that he was fearless, willing to take every big shot, he played better on the road than he did at home, which is almost inconceivable. And, you know, just the evolution of his game, when he's a sophomore, he sort of burst onto the scene, and he never rested on that. Got better each year. And, I mean, it's an unbelievable story in terms of the career arc, the college career arc of the kid is just amazing.
Right, absolutely. I used to come up to the school and watch them play pickup when I was younger. Probably like I think I was a sophomore, and I remember they finished playing pickup, and Juan was just they turned the lights off, and Juan was just sitting there shooting, just knocking down three, just in there for a while, just working. I'm like, that's crazy. I'm still shooting same form, nothing changed, but just in there still working out.
You know, the other thing is he was the master of. You know, he knew exactly how to use Gary's offense too. You know, use the flex to his advantage so that he could knock down 17-foot elbow jump shots till the cows came home. You know, and he understood where to be. You know, and I don't know if it was film study necessarily, or maybe it was just a guy thinking, "What's in it for me? How does this benefit me?" But he learned to exploit exactly what coach wanted with that offense. And a lot of that ability comes from not hundreds, thousands of jump shots, thousands and thousands and thousands. And, you know, he put in the work. He deserved all the credit in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What was one of your favorite, let's stick to Colefield right now. What was one of your favorite moments? You were like, I would never forget this moment. Give me I want that moment, and then obviously your best Maryland moment, like by you, since you've been there and as an analyst, this court size and everything.
Well, the call has to be when Blake stole the ball from Jay Williams, when he turned to say something to Kay right before the half, and Blake darted in and stole it and then went in and laid it up, you know, at the other end. You know, yeah, you just don't see that happen at all, especially from a player as supremely talented as Jay Williams was.
Absolutely.
You know, there have been a lot of moments in Cole, one of which, of course, was the loss, you know, the gone in 60 seconds. I mean, that was brutal as it was a phenomenal game. And it was one of those things where I never, the beauty of the broadcasting is I got the great seats without having to take the game home with me, you know. Right. But I remember sitting in the parking lot after that game, you know, and I was 10 minutes before I could even drive out of the parking lot. Like, Jesus, that just happened, you know. But there were so many great moments. The best moment, of course, is the national championship. But, you know, in Cole, there were just the heat of that place. See, I got a chance to play there. And, you know, I used to go over and play during summer camp, during the summers. When I was in high school, I got invited over there by Mo Howard, one of the, you know, one of the Maryland greats at the time, back in the mid-70s. So I went, got a chance to play in there. I coached in there when I was at AU. And so it was always a special place to me. And I remember telling my assistants when I was a head coach at AU, I used to tell these guys when they were like, you know, do you really want to play Maryland this year? And I said, I played Maryland in a parking lot. You know what? I mean, that's a great game. We take vans. 20 minutes, 25 minutes across the city, and you know, you pocket a pretty sizable guarantee check, and then you play against the best. So, Cole is always a really special place, and I understand Xfinity, and you know, the there has to be progress. You know, you and I, we sort of relate the hoops to the 94-foot, you know, wood court, but in this day and age, you know, the arena has to have all the trappings of, you know, you got to compete against the marketing money out there, you know, the other options that consumers have. So, you know, Xfinity's had its own great moments, and you were part of a bunch of those, Travis. I mean, there were some crazy, crazy wins. I have a podcast that I do with Coach Williams, and we had Dave Odom on recently, and he was talking about, he was a coach at Wake when they were very good back in the 90s, Coach Tim Duncan. And he was talking about the great run that Randolph Childress had back in the 90s in one of the ACC tournaments. And I know Gary, I could feel Gary's, you know, back get up a little bit, because Gary was dying to tell him that was nothing compared to John Gilchrist in 2004. In terms of what he said, you know, Gary's whole thing is, you know, first of all, we played the games at pretty much midnight. You know, the first game was played at dark 30. And then the second game against North Carolina State, who we hated at the time, State was up 19 at the break, and it looked like it was over, right? And then you come back with a phenomenal win there, and then you got Duke in the finals on national TV. That did not suck. That was one of the great weekends ever. Even though it wasn't at home, that was one of the great weekends ever.
No, absolutely. Same here. And I was actually at that Duke and Maryland game when they gone in 60. I was at that game.
Were you?
I was there. I was at the game, and it was crazy because I was excited. Me and Chris McCray went to the game, and you guys were up, and I was like, oh, the game is over. I think I wanted to leave early because it was going to get, you know, when it's leaving that place, it's super crowded. I said, I didn't want to get caught in that. So I said, oh, they got the game. They're going to win. And I think I was riding in the car, and I heard that Duke came back and won. I'm like, are you – we had the game. Like,
So you're like the old guys in the Progressive commercial. They're just worried about the parking. You know, you want to get out of there early, right?
I definitely did, man. I definitely wanted to get out of there because I know how crazy it would be. And it was super hot anyway.
Yeah, it was blazing. Yeah.
But I definitely know what you mean in regards to if you talk to the guys that played at both the Coldfield and, you know, Xfinity, like the Drew Nichols and those guys. I mean, I talked to Drew. He was like, oh, yeah, definitely Coldfield. Because the heat of it's the old school. It's just the memories, the history in it. And then, like you say, you got it was the Comcast when we went there, but the Xfinity Center, and it's, like you said, it's beautiful. It's huge. It's 17,000, and they got the suites, and it's decorative, and, you know, but this, I use the comparisons to the Matha, the old gym, and the new gym. I picked the old gym all day long, you know, because everybody's right there. You're not going to hold that many people. We couldn't play a Gonzaga in there or, you know, a championship game or anything like that because there was going to be too many people. But I was like, you know, the new arena, they got AC and it's cold and then it's nice and it's, you know.
Well, one is a gym, the other is an arena, you know, and there's a difference. And I remember the first time I was in DeMatha's new place. It's not that new now, but the first time I was in DeMatha's arena, and I was there with a buddy of mine who's a college coach, and it was a summer league game, and I was sitting there with him just talking, and he said, beautiful place, right? And I said, yeah, but I, you know, it just doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like the math to me, you know?
Absolutely.
So cool places, nevertheless, you know?
Absolutely. Hey, but before we move on to talk some more Marona basketball, let me tell you guys a little bit about our partners over at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. If you haven't signed up with Bet Rivers yet, now's the time, because they are offering a $250 match bonus for your first deposit. But what sets them apart is that they require just one playthrough to turn your bonus into cash money. With their new Rush Pay Instant Approval, withdrawing your winnings is safer, more secure, and more reliable. The basketball season tipping off, get in on the action by going to BetRivers.com today or by downloading the BetRivers app. Must be 21 years or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. So now, let's get into this season. Obviously, beginning of the season, we have Coach Turgeon leaving. What are your thoughts on that? I met Coach Turgeon a number of times, been on the show, great guy, you know, always welcomed me there. You know, I practiced with those guys a number of times. But did you expect for him to leave at the beginning of the season the way he did? And what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think there's any way you could have expected him to leave. And, you know, in retrospect, Travis, you know, I mean, honestly, the only answer I could have for you is I'm disappointed in that, you know, he's a lifelong competitor and a guy who was a successful player and coach. And, you know, it surprises me that he would leave when he did. And I'm also disappointed in this because, with absolutely no disrespect intended to anybody here with this comment, I don't think that their record would be what it is right now if he were still there. But then again, you never know what's going on behind somebody's front door. Clearly he had given this some thought. He talked to his family a lot about it. I have no idea, you know, you and I, we weren't privy to those conversations. I have no idea what the gist of them were. So, I consider him a friend and I respect him enough to give him the latitude to make that decision. So it's disappointing. Because he brought in some pretty good players, guys who now are sort of trying to figure it out. And not a whole lot of identity with this group right now. And, and it's a pretty unforgiving league. I don't think it's the ACC circa, 2002 or anything like that. Yeah. But it's a good league. And there's some good teams in some very difficult places to play. So, at the end of the day, it's just a team, that's floundering and then some right now.
Right. And, obviously a number of people asked me about it or what my thoughts are and just stand up there. And I was never a coach, but I was a player. And just, whether it's here or overseas where, I played on teams where we had 2 to 3 coaches within one season. And the adjustment that makes because everybody has a different style and things like that. Obviously, it's different because Coach Manning was already on staff, so they kind of already knew him and had some familiarity with it, but he still was new as well. But I knew it was an adjustment. And then where everything's swirling around and, especially right before, like, the season starting, and it's so much craziness. So as a player, you try to, and the coaches that's still there, you try to get the players together. Hey, let's come together as a team. Be one, let's try to focus and get things back on track. So I was giving it that look, especially we already had the transfers coming in. And I said, that's going to take some adjusting. You have to get the chemistry going. Like, it's, they're experienced, but at the same time, I mean, everything has to click. And sometimes things don't always click like you may want it to. So I said, give it some time. Maybe they get it back on track. And then, obviously Coach Turgeon leave, and then that's an adjustment too. And just I watched them play last night, and like you said, it's just, and people was talking about it a lot too, like there's just no identity, as you can say, in the sense of they're still trying to figure it out, and it's almost February. And because I was like, well, maybe they could turn it around, once they get into Big Ten play, they got to adjust. I mean, especially the experienced guys, you're like, look, it is what it is at this point. We have to keep moving forward. What's done is done. Let's just focus on us and the rest of the season going forward. But it just seems defensive-wise, it was tough. Like, they just didn't have no answers, especially for, Hunter Dickinson. Like, it was just – you had that, and then, in the second half, Ayala and Scott, they turned it on as if they wanted – the team turned it on in the sense of you see the – but it was kind of too late, especially against a team like a Michigan.
Yeah.
So, it's – like I said, being an ex-player, I'm like, things could change. We're good when – and get that confidence boosted and maybe things could turn around. But do you see that with this team? And then obviously we're in almost February.
Well, last year they had a really terrible start to league play, and they were able to turn it around because they won a couple of really significant games on the road. They won at Wisconsin, they won at Illinois. Now, keep in mind, those were in games where there were no fans. So The away wins, it's still significant, and it still makes you – sometimes a road win feels like it's two wins. You mentioned the defensive end, and to me, that's kind of one of the issues, Travis. If I'm trying to find an identity with this team and trying to figure out what they can do well and what they can kind of hang their hat on and to establish an identity – I'm thinking, okay, you're athletic enough, you're rugged, you got some decent size, not a great three-point shooting team, all right? So to a large degree, you might want to put that in your back pocket, right, the three-point shot. Let's attack the basket. Let's get to the foul line. Up until last night, they were leading the Big Ten in free throws attempted. That's a good stat. That's a really good stat.
Right.
But the thing is that with that athleticism and being rugged, you'd think – they would be a good defensive team too. But I don't know if it's a coaching change or what have you, but the concentration on defense has just never really been there, and it's never been there consistently for sure.
Right.
And that's a frustrating thing because I think that over the course of the last several years, and it's kind of a Maryland trademark, but way pre-Turge, certainly into Gary's run, just a very good defensive club. And, that's been really disappointing. I think the other thing is too, is that I think sometimes it's easy to score points when you're down by 20. Okay. And I'm not dogging anybody. I'm not, but I'm just saying that when the game starts, you got to be ready to start, and you can't find yourself in a position if you are. And I do think that Maryland had two of the best six players on that court. I think that's fair. Yeah. Eric Ayala, Dante Scott. So if you got two of the best six players on the court, I think you can't be down 20 at half, and even if you're down 10 at half, that's doable. Halves of games are so long. All the breaks you get, it's a completely different mountain to climb than being down 19 or 20 or whatever they were last night. So, I think that it's good that those guys came back, and it's good that they scored a little bit. But we need more earlier and better earlier across the board from basically everybody.
No, absolutely. And it's definitely, like I said, just going off the game from last night, it was just, I'm watching them like, okay, you get a few stops here and come down and execute an offense. We may get back into this game, but it just, every time Michigan went down the floor, it just seemed they scored at will without, and I'm just like.
To your point, I always, and Walt Williams and I talk about this a lot of times during the broadcast. So I'm a big, you look at it like this, two stops, two scores. And all of a sudden what you do, if you get that, is you start to think about the notion of stringing together stops.
Right.
Okay. Two comes three out of four. I've stopped three out of four. Right. Three out of four becomes four out of six. And now all of a sudden you've given yourself an opportunity to cut into the lead. And if you continue to get to the foul line, the Terps have been doing, you're cutting into the lead with no time going off the clock. So you have to take it in little pieces sometimes, little bite-sized pieces. But I totally agree with you. You have the central part of that is to be able to get multiple stops over the course of a period of time. To your point,
I was just like, yeah. It's just the simple plays, like to give the ball to the Hunter in the post. He is going to make a good pass for a shot, or he's making a move and he's going like, but I mean, he's a really good player. So you can't take nothing from that. But like going forward, the mindset, I mean, what do you think the team needs to do? Is it possible they could turn it around and get things going? Or is it just because there's so much going on and they still trying to figure it out? And it's kind of, I mean, I'm never saying never, because I've been in situations where it clicked at the right time. Yep. So I'm not saying that. And they have good enough players that it can happen if things just click. But I do know Merlin fans as well. And I read some of the stuff that you say. And like I say, every time it's asked, I look at from both sides. You know, I look from both sides and I understand, because some people are really invested into the team and they diehard fans. But as a player, especially like when you have guys with good leaderships on a team, to try to ride things together and be competitive in a sense of like, look, I'm not going out like this. Like, we got to figure it out, whether it's, you know, behind the door meetings, just the players. You know, we had a number of that even when I was playing, you know, just to try to figure it out, because at the time we wanted to win. Like, we gotta figure something out. And they have players that can make it happen in the sense of getting some decent wins for the rest of the season and try to make something happen.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, that kind of action, that kind of activity requires kind of type A leadership, if you know what I mean. These are people that are vocal, that are, you know, extroverted. I don't know who that guy is in this particular group. You know, your leaders sometimes by definition are your best players. If that's the case, you know, one of the great things about Eric Ayala, for instance, is he's a pretty chill guy. He's a good guy, but that doesn't help you in the leadership area. You know, that doesn't help you, you know, light the room up when it needs to be lit up. So, you know, I mean, in my world, I mean, hope springs eternal for me. And I always think that the next game is going to be your best game. And I think that's the only way to approach it. And I think that when you talk to these guys, I think that one of the things they need to know is, you know, everybody else has given up on you. You know, it's just us. It's just us 15 guys in this locker room. So circle the wagons, prove them all wrong. You know, fight for the guys in this locker room. You know, now even with that, you just have to play better, you know, play better for longer. There's not really higher calculus sometimes to who wins and who loses. A lot of times it's who plays better for longer during the course of a game. All these guys are high level athletes and players, Power Five schools, Big Ten, probably the best conference in the country. You know, there's talent on the floor without question. Right. So, beyond that, it becomes who's playing better that night. And there's been stretches in games where I'm thinking we're really playing well, but there's never really been a game where I thought, you know, boy, we played well from start to finish. Even Florida, which was their best win of the season up in Brooklyn, you know, it was just one of those things. I thought we just sort of outlasted them a little bit. It wasn't that we played that well for a whole long period of time.
Right. And absolutely. And to your point in regards to, you know, the players coming together and just basically saying, look, it's just us. Everybody gave up on us. And that's kind of honestly, that's how we was able to be successful when we won the ACC championship that year. Because we literally, like, coach mindset was like, even coach, but we ourselves were like, look, pretty much everybody, because we were young, given we were sophomores and freshmen and Jamar is a senior, but we literally had that attitude, like, F them. Like, we had an attitude, like, it's just us. forget everything else, forget everybody. So that kind of eased our minds in the sense of we blocked literally everything out of our thoughts. So it was nothing. We didn't hear anything. We hear no distraction. It was just, all right, look, this is what we're going to do. You know, coach was just like, have fun. And that was gave it like that positive energy.
You know, Travis, I was thinking back to that tournament when Dave Odom was talking about it. And then Gary and I ended up talking about it after the podcast we did. You guys, if I remember correctly, going into that tournament, you were not in the NCAA tournament. You were on the outside looking in by almost everybody's estimation, right? So you end up playing Chris Paul and Justin Gray in the first round, Wake Forest, at two dynamic guards. And I remember that game started late as hell because of all the games that were piggybacked, you know, earlier in the day. And I remember thinking that game, and that was also, there was so much going on at that game. There was a guy who shot, his gun went off in the crowd and, you know, shot himself in the butt. And, you know, but I remember thinking of that game, this is perfect. You know, we're playing late at night. It's just, it was basically an empty gym. It wasn't that crowded at all. I remember just being very quiet in there. And it's really just us against them, you know, and it was one of those kind of a springboard game. And even though the next day you guys came out and didn't play well at all in the first half of the NC State game, it was such a great, great weekend. And more importantly, you know, people talk about that comeback at NC State and everybody relives the Duke highlights. You can see those on YouTube forever, you know, that final game. But the game against Wake Forest was sort of the signature game to me in that tournament. You beat a team who was having a very good year with two dynamic guards. And it was one of those things like, you know, after the game, you're like, okay. Right. Well, here we are, you know?
Right.
Here we are.
Absolutely. And it was because, like I said, our mindset was literally like, and then coach was just like, we didn't run flex at all that weekend. We ran 4-out-1-in. Because I think we – I want to say NC State. I think he tried it and it worked. And I think we ended up winning that game. And I think he wanted to continue to try it out into the tournament. And that's how we literally just did that. And then he kind of just like, just have fun. And that's what kind of was the turning point. You know, we tuned everything out. Obviously, John was off.
Literally,
I tell people all the time, like, John was in a place that as his teammate, roommate, like, seeing him in the locker room all the time, like, he literally came in, didn't speak to anybody, had his head down, was reading, had a Bible, reading his Bible, locked in, and just went out with a suit and, like, come on, guys, and just put on a clinic. I actually thought he was going to leave after that year. When we lost to Syracuse, I was like, oh, he's we on a bus. We're talking like, yeah, he's John's gone. John is gone.
Well, sports are the greatest reality show ever. When you can go from famine to feast like that it wasn't even 72 hours, right? Because that first game, that was back when there were still only 8 teams in the league. So I think the Friday, it was a late Friday night game and a Saturday afternoon game and a Sunday noon championship game. That was less than 72 hours, and the world looks a lot different, man. The sun had come up in a big way, you know, by the end of that weekend.
Definitely one of my greatest – people ask what was my greatest moment, that. And it's not just because we won it. Because honestly, I talked to Ryan about this in regards to has he ever thought back on the national – winning the national championship, how did he feel? Like, even that weekend was a blur. I mean, I was there, but it's just like – It's interesting to talk to the fans and the alumnus and people that was at the game to get their perspective of it. Like, they tell me stories. Like, I just heard the stories for the first time, like, when I went to tailgates for a football game, and they're sharing their moments. And I'm like, what? I'm like, it's different. it's different when you in it, but when you, like, watching it and you're there and you're around other fans and you're in North Carolina, just that. It was like the greatest thing to hear because of their perspective of it and what their thoughts was and how they felt. And it was just like, wow, it's like I was there, but it felt like I wasn't there because you're telling me from a whole different point of view. And I look back on it. I don't down on it too much because it was literally happening so fast and it was just like so much happening and we was in the moment, you know. But definitely one of my greatest moments ever in basketball, period, because the guys I was with, what we did and what we was able to achieve.
Well, you think about the way that whole thing was set up too, Travis, you know, I mean, one of the cool things about the ACC tournament for the most part is that it's in the same place every year in Greensboro, right? Not all the time, but for the most part, it's in the same place every year, Greensboro, North Carolina. So that's cool. On the other hand, for teams that are traveling in as far as like Maryland does or Florida State does or Miami does, you know, those are away games, you know? Sorry. Absolutely. You know, absolutely. I mean, it's a great idea to have it at the same place all the time, but it's an incredible advantage to the schools that are, you know, 30, 35, 40 minutes, you know, within 30 or 35 minutes away from the arena. So it was a great accomplishment. And one, you know, I mean, just as a guy who was just on the ride along program like me, you know, it was a great, great weekend. One I'll never forget. Thank you for that too, by the way.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed
that. It was definitely a moment. Yeah. Now, before I let you go, I have to ask you this. I want to hear your thoughts on it, if you can share. So obviously the season's not over yet. You know, Coach Manning is still interim coach. But it's people have been talking about it. Who could be the next head coach at Maryland? What kind of coach do we need? And, you know, who would you like to see there? What are your thoughts on that? And if you can share, who would you'd be like, oh, this could be a perfect situation for this person here? Because people ask me, and they're like, obviously the Maryland fans, they want to get back to winning in a sense. Like, sure. they just the energy, the stuff, the things that they were used to in a sense. What they always ask, what kind of person can bring that there? If we're just talking about just the energy wise, just the embrace to bring that program back to I don't want to say the glory days, but just get back on track in a sense and get the program, bring the program back up to where they would like to see it at.
You know, I think that good question. And a lot of these things are way above my where I'm at, you know, in terms of the scheme of things. You know, Maryland has been used to some outsized personalities as their head coach. You think about Lefty and Gary, and those guys wildly successful being who they were. I don't know that you're going to get guys like that. I think the guys that you're going to attract is going to be directly related to your commitment to what you're doing. And that doesn't just mean, you know, the numbers are the numbers. Is it going to be $3.5 million a year? Is it going to be $4.5 million? I don't know. But I think one of the things that you also have to do is you have to get a shovel into the ground for this practice facility. You know, you have to, you know, a lot of proven guys, proven Power Five guys won't really entertain the offer or the idea without the facilities being apples to apples. You know, why would I leave this to go there where, you know, I don't have all the facilities and the capabilities that I have. So you do have to improve some things. You have to decide what you're going to commit to that. I think there are a lot of really capable guys out there, Travis. I think that, you know, somebody asked me, I was on a radio thing yesterday, and somebody said, you know, I think this is a program that's descending. Do you feel like this is a really attractive job for prospective coaches? And I blew that up right away. It's a great job. It's a fabulous job. When you consider the recruiting footprint, the resources, I think, that are going to be there, the facilities that I think are going to be there. And I do think it's a top 15 job. And when I talk to friends of mine who are still in the coaching profession, they all say it is a phenomenal job. You know, it's an absolute keeper. So there are a lot of things you have to decide. So are you hiring for 5 years? Are you hiring for 10 to 15? So, you know, I hear names thrown out. There are older guys who would be great coaches, but you're probably looking at a 5-year run. And that would include guys like And again, just throwing names. I'm throwing names out that everybody's used to seeing. Patino, Beeline, you know, people like that. So are you looking at a five-year window? I don't think the university is looking at a five-year window, okay, right, for this hire. And then, of course, you look at a completely different criteria of candidates, right? Are you in a position financially where you can pay a buyout? You know, some of the more successful guys who are in Power Five jobs have a buyout that you have to pay cash on the barrel head to get that out of their contract. Are you in a position to do that? I don't think so, but I don't know. It's above my pay scale. So there's so many different things that go into this. I will tell you, I think there are a lot of great candidates out there. I think that over the course of the next 6 weeks, I think you'll have an idea. You know, these guys are all being back channeled now. This is the way it works. You know how you put together a committee. They deal with agents and lawyers and things like that. And there's conversations going on. And I know of a couple of guys who are pretty significant names who are very interested in it. But the parameters have to be right. The money has to be right. The resources have to be right. And I just think you need a proven winner in this job. I don't think you bet on a guy who hasn't established himself over multiple years. Right. And because I don't think you have to at this point. So I don't really have a name necessarily to throw at you, but I think there are a lot of different things you have to decide in terms of direction here.
No, I definitely agree. Like I said, that's been an ongoing conversation. People want me to come on and talk about it. I look at it from different perspective. I'm not, into the coaching thing. I know, going to these tailgates and people, what do you think about this? What do you think about that guy? What are your thoughts on this? I'm like, look, I understand where you're coming from.
I'm going to remind you, I was at a tailgate with you a couple of times this past fall. So
exactly.
Rounds and you were the mayor of College Park that day.
Nah, I definitely enjoyed talking to those guys, and it's crazy because I never went to any tailgates when I was there, bro. Until it was years after, and I went to a homecoming. I said, "This is what they do at tailgates here." I've been missing out, man. I said, "Man, I said, good thing I didn't go when I was there."
Nobody told me.
The other guys on the team was going out, and they were waking up like 8 a.m. I'm like, "You crazy? I'm not getting out of bed that early in the morning." Like, so I literally never went, but I said, "Man, I'm like, dang, I was missing out." But anyways, I just want to say I definitely appreciate you coming on the Go Terpins with Travis Garrison. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you when I was at Maryland and the conversations that we had, and the interviews that you gave to me and that you had for me, and the conversations we had. You always been a great guy, and always good to talk to. Always loved and enjoyed talking to you. I appreciate you, so I just want to let you know that.
Thanks, Travis.
And I thank you for everything. And I thank you for your time.
Oh, you're the man, Travis. Good luck with all this, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.